Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. So we want to follow up now on something we left kind of hanging yesterday about a specific exchange between the president and Fox News host Tucker Carlson after the Trump and Putin summit about the tiny country of Montenegro. It came up in relation to the basic foundation of NATO, so-called Article 5, which is that any NATO nation will consider an attack on any other NATO nation as an attack on it. Here again is the 22nd exchange that begins with Tucker Carlson's question.
Why should my son go to Montenegro to defend it from attack? Why is that?
I understand what you're saying. I've asked the same question. You know, Montenegro is a tiny country with very strong people.
Yeah, I'm not against Montenegro or Albania.
No, by the way, they're very strong people. They're very aggressive people. They may get aggressive. And congratulations, you're in World War III.
So yesterday, and yes, we will address that stereotyping of Montenegrins as very aggressive people. Yesterday, I acknowledged that I didn't know why they would single out Montenegro as an example, other than that it's a small, obscure place. And do we want to send our children over there to die for Montenegro if Montenegro is attacked? Because what does that have to do with America? So thanks for all your tweets leading me to the real answer. It turns out to be much more than that, and much more to the benefit of guess who? Vladimir Putin. So with me now to talk about this and more are James Homan, national political correspondent for The Washington Post. He also writes their daily 202 political column and anchors the PowerPost podcast. And Christina Mazza, a reporter covering foreign policy and international affairs for Newsweek. Hi, James. Hi, Christina. Thank you both so much for coming on today.
Great to be with you, Brian.
Hi, Brian.
Christina, why Montenegro?
Well, Montenegro is one of the most recent members of NATO. It joined in 2017, and right before Montenegro joined, the country's prosecutors and the country's leadership has said that Russia attempted to stage a coup in the country. So the most recent research says that there were around 50 Russian military intelligence agents in the country when Russia tried to stage a coup in Montenegro in October 2016. The investigation is still ongoing, but this is a country that Russia would very much like to influence.
And when Montenegro joined NATO, you said that was just last year, right?
Yes.
There was a vote in the Senate that had to do with what? Was it kind of affirming the U.S. support for Montenegro becoming part of NATO?
That's right. So, Congress voted overwhelmingly in favor of Montenegro joining NATO. Many Republicans are very supportive of Montenegro's NATO membership. And President Trump himself signed, a note congratulating Montenegro for joining and saying that it's committed to, that the administration is committed to Montenegro's security.
Now, John McCain, who, of course, has been going back and forth with Trump about Trump's relationship with Putin over and over again, spoke out on the Senate floor, I guess, last year when this was up for a vote. This passed the Senate very easily, but there were two people who voted against Montenegro joining NATO. One of them was Rand Paul, who's, libertarian, kind of isolationist on foreign policy. But here's what John McCain had to say at the time last year.
If there's objection, you are achieving the objectives of Vladimir Putin. You're achieving the objectives of trying to dismember this small country that has already been the subject of attempted coup. I have no idea why anyone would object to this, except that I will say, if they object, they are now carrying out the desires and ambitions of Vladimir Putin, and I do not say that lightly.
John McCain on March 15th of last year. So, James Homan from The Washington Post, aha, that's why Tucker Carlson brought up Montenegro with Trump, and Trump was so enthusiastic about being skeptical about Montenegro. Yes?
Absolutely. Yes, that is a huge part of it. And this is something that has continued to be an issue. Remember, Trump came into Helsinki after being in Brussels last week for the NATO summit with a lot of frustration there. The Montenegro prime minister was at that meeting. Trump feels like the U.S. isn't getting a good deal out of NATO. And he also, I think the president is aware that McCain was a key force in pushing for Montenegro to join the alliance.
So, according to The New Yorker, in April of last year, after the U.S. did ratify Montenegro's membership, a White House release stated, quote, President Trump congratulates the Montenegrin people for their resilience and their demonstrated commitment to NATO's democratic values. Well, that sounds pretty traditional foreign policy establishment, James.
Yeah, well, Donald Trump clearly didn't write that statement. Now, what we're seeing kind of day in and day out is a disconnect between the president and the presidency. So, you know, Donald Trump clearly doesn't understand the value of the NATO alliance. He thinks it's not a net plus for the U.S., but pretty much every person who works for him, including his own appointees like Jim Mattis at the Pentagon, John Bolton, the National Security Council, everyone at the State Department, Mike Pompeo, they see NATO as incredibly important. And the Republican foreign policy establishment does truly believe that if not for the NATO security guarantee, it's only a matter of time before Russia gobbles up Montenegro. They wouldn't be able to defend themselves. And the idea of being in NATO isn't that we're actually going to go to war. It's that the threat that the United States might take military action to protect Montenegro will deter Russia from invading them or meddling in their affairs. And that's one of the reasons so many Republicans, even if they're not saying it loudly, are really upset, because they feel like those comments to Tucker Carlson undercut the deterrent effect of Montenegro being part of the alliance.
So, listeners, I wonder if anybody out there right now has Montenegro roots or ties to Montenegro and wants to call up. We've never done this particular call-in before. So any Montenegrin Americans or anyone with ties to that tiny country, which I think has a population little less than the state of Connecticut, around the population of Washington, D.C., not even the state, anybody with ties to Montenegro, we invite you in on this, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, with James Holman from The Washington Post and Christina Mazza from Newsweek. So, Christina, you had an article yesterday headlined, "As Donald Trump Questions Montenegro's Place in NATO, Alliance Expands into Region Russia Wants to Control." Now, one could argue that this really is NATO being aggressive. This is the U.S. and all the NATO allies really getting into Russia's territorial kitchen by expanding all the way to Montenegro, which used to be a part of Yugoslavia, all the way over there. What's the NATO point of view on why go that far, and what's the Russian point of view?
Well, I think really it's a question of sovereignty. So these countries, countries like Montenegro and countries like Macedonia, they're very eager to join NATO. A lot of their leadership, they view Russia as a threat, as encroaching on their own sovereignty, and they view NATO as a guarantee to be able to determine their own politics and their own geopolitics. And so, I mean, Russia, obviously, NATO was formed following World War II, and it was created in order to counter Soviet aggression in Europe. And a lot of the, and Putin has never gotten over that. Putin, obviously, he's a KGB agent. He grew up in that atmosphere, and he is very pro-Soviet. He views Russia as a world superpower, and he wants it to maintain that position on the world stage. And so he views NATO encroachment as a threat. He doesn't want NATO to be on its borders. And so, he's demonstrated that he's willing to go into countries like Georgia, like Ukraine, interfere in the politics there in order to ensure that those countries can't join NATO. And he is willing to do that also in Macedonia and in Montenegro, according to politicians and sources there.
What's the, is there a source of the Trump reference in the clip we played, which is so cringeworthy, saying the Montenegrin people are a very aggressive people? Is this, like a known stereotype of people from Montenegro, Christina?
I'm honestly not sure what that was based on. You know, this is a country of fewer than a million inhabitants. It has, you know, a standing army of, you know, under 2,000 people. What that would be based on and you know, their demonstration of aggression is not proven.
James. What was Russian experts and intelligence professionals, including former CIA folks, were particularly alarmed, not because that's a stereotype, which it obviously is, but because that is the exact language that the Kremlin uses. That is a Russian talking point that they often use to describe Eastern Europeans who are not sort of under their influence. And so a lot of people sort of had their antennae raised because that's the kind of rhetoric that Vladimir Putin uses to describe the Montenegro administration, which is friendly to the West.
And if any country has been aggressive, you could argue that it's been Russia by attempting the coup in Montenegro.
Exactly.
So, James, put this in the context of all these back and forths with Trump and Putin this week. There was, you know, I have no reason to think it would be Russia. Oh, I meant to say I have no reason to think it wouldn't be Russia. Then yesterday it was, is Russia interfering in this year's election? No. Oh, I didn't mean to say no. I was just saying no, I won't answer your question right at this time. The answer is really yes. And now, although this interview with Tucker Carlson was recorded before any of these flip-flop reversals, it's just more evidence that Trump seems to be saying things that back up Vladimir Putin's positions in the world.
Exactly. And it goes back to that point I made a minute ago, which is the president versus the presidency. And we absolutely are seeing that here. We've seen this pattern before. Remember after Charlottesville last year in August, there was the racial violence on Saturday. Initially, the president said, you know, both sides are to blame. One side isn't worse than the other. And then there was huge blowback. So then Trump went to the podium in the White House, read a written statement that said, actually, you know, I condemn white supremacists in the strongest terms, and basically walking it back. Then he was upset about not getting more credit for that and then went back to his original position. I think the takeaway here is that Trump truly refuses to acknowledge and doesn't believe in his heart of hearts. It's hard to know what he really thinks, but won't acknowledge the Russian interference. There's a great story on the front page of the New York Times today that he was actually shown some of the most sensitive intelligence 2 weeks before the inauguration in January 2017, including text messages from Russian intelligence officers to other Russian intelligence officers. And apparently, according to the Times, a top secret source who's close to Putin explained to the U.S. intelligence community exactly what they were doing and what their strategy was. And Trump at the time seemed to accede to these intelligence professionals, including his own guys. And he just, it hasn't stuck. He can't come to terms with it. And so that's why I think you're seeing this back and forth. You saw it again. He gave an interview to CBS that aired on the evening news last night. And he said, you know, I would hold Putin personally responsible if he indeed tried to interfere in the election. And it's sort of like, there's everyone agrees that he did, and he just, the president won't go there.
You know, besides the backs and forths, it reminded me of Charlottesville too, in I think a slightly different way, because what he said after Charlottesville that was so controversial was there are good people on both sides. And what he said in the news conference with Putin the other day, when asked if he believes his own national intelligence director or if he believes Putin's denial about meddling in the 2016 elections, he basically said, I respect both sides.
Exactly.
It was so much like Charlottesville.
It was. It really was.
So, okay. On connections to Montenegro, one listener tweets, the fictional detective Nero Wolfe was from Montenegro. Another listener tweets, didn't Trump shove the Montenegro president? Christina, that did happen, right?
That did happen. It was the prime minister. It was in one of the previous NATO meetings. He was trying to get to the front of the line for a photo opportunity and sort of shoved the prime minister out of the way. Apparently, he didn't know who he was.
He's nobody. I'm just going to push him out of the way and get to the front of the
likes to be in the
photo shoot.
Yes.
And Tanya in Manhattan has a connection to Montenegro. Tanya, you're on WNYC. Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you. My name is Tanya Domi. I'm a professor at Columbia University. I teach on the Western Balkans. I'm a former advisor in the office of the Prime Minister in Montenegro, and I've written about these topics. Clearly, what came about, I think, this week is that I'm under no illusion that what happened was that Putin brought this up during their closed meeting with one another. Russia has had their eye not only on Montenegro, and they're going to continue to undertake activities that would undermine the government. It was a real blow to Russia itself that Montenegro did get into NATO, and it further blocked Russia's access through southern Europe with Montenegro in NATO. There's already consequences out of that, and there's actually four Russian agents that are wanted for arrest under Interpol for that attempted coup in October 2016. Mm-hmm. But beyond just Montenegro, in the Balkans writ large, Macedonia is next in line. They have been invited to enter into a candidacy for enlargement if the name issue they have, the name dispute they have with Greece, is resolved, and that's moving in the right direction.
So Macedonia might be the next country to join NATO, is what you're saying.
That's right, but there's really clear evidence that Russia has threatened Macedonia not to enter Montenegro. They've done it overtly. NATO. They've done it overtly through the office of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. They've engaged in probably activities within the country. Another aspect of Russia's role in the Balkans is their use of soft power. They've brought up a number of media outlets in Serbia. They have funded NGOs in Serbia that really push towards Moscow, mm-hmm. and they're really undermining Bosnia right now in a critical way.
Let me ask you one devil's advocate question from the Russian point of view, which is they might say, what if Russia led an international defense pact that included a lot of countries in Latin America to protect it from the United States, and complained that the United States was funding non-governmental organizations in Latin American countries? How would we feel about it, and is it analogous?
I don't think that's analogous, because there is a history. Clearly, there is a history, and it's based on Slavic Brotherhood. Let's put that in quotes. It's been a mutually opportunistic relationship going back to the Congress of Vienna. So this is not unusual. But what they're doing is it's not just about a security issue. It's about democracy and stability and stable governments that yield to and practice democratic governance. And that's one of the selling points of NATO for its expansion, is that they reinforce democratic governance.
Tanya, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you so much for your call and your knowledge. I really appreciate
it. Okay, thank you.
You sharing it with us. Listener Amanda tweets, in The Great Gatsby, Gatsby's medal is from Montenegro.
Sorry.
Michael in the East Village, you're on WNYC. Hello, Michael.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
I've spent a lot of time in former Yugoslavia. I'm not Montenegrin. Since the early 70s, when I lived in Sarajevo for 3 years, I had a roommate who was from Montenegro. I had students who were from Montenegro. I visited them. I stayed in their homes. More recently, I have friends in Budva and Sveti Stefan, and a friend took me on a drive up to the top of a hill outside of Sveti Stefan, where there's an old, old church. And around this church were all homes. The entire village has been bought up by Russians. And either the home, I didn't see any people, but either the homes were finished with elaborate, you know, built-in swimming pools and big SUVs, or they were half finished, or they had a for sale sign out front. Montenegrins are very poor, and they've sold out a lot of property, et cetera, to people who can afford to buy them, and they seem to be mostly Russian oligarchs. In the little port city of Budva, there's huge yachts, and they're all Russian-owned, and the dancers in the discos are all Russian. I'm sure that they were astounded when Montenegro joined NATO, and that was a blow to them because they were clearly trying to take over.
Very interesting. And maybe that, that recalls for me one of our callers yesterday who said, you know, that exact area that you described and what's happening there, maybe that's a place where a certain president of the United States has an interest in a Trump hotel. And that's why he's cozying up to Putin on this one. Who knows? Michael, thank you very much. We're almost out of time. Christina, I'll draw attention to one other thing that you wrote in Newsweek, which is that Russia's interest in Montenegro heightened several years ago as an alternative to its naval base in Syria. What would that connection be?
That's exactly right. So, Russia is looking for access to the Mediterranean through, obviously, different ports, and it wanted to be able to refuel some of the military ships that it was using in Syria in ports in Montenegro. And that was an offer that Russia gave to the leadership of Montenegro, and they rejected it. So, obviously, Russia was very disappointed by that, and that was shortly before the coup allegedly took place.
Let me touch one other story very briefly that I think maybe both of you have written about, but Christina, we haven't touched this one yet at all on the show this week, even when we talked about other Mueller investigation things. You wrote up yesterday, NRA activist Maria Butina had ties to Russian spies and offered sex for access to U.S. political circles, court documents claim. So last Friday, Mueller indicted 12 Russians for allegedly interfering with the U.S. elections in 2016. In a separate indictment, not from Mueller's office, this Russian woman, Maria Butina, has been indicted. And the potential bombshell there is that she did apparently have these ties to the NRA, which might have been the funnel for a lot of Russian money that wound up via the NRA in the Trump campaign. So what's important here?
So Maria Butina is a woman, I believe that investigators have known about her for a long time. I remember the Senate Intelligence Committee was looking into connections between her and the NRA and the Trump campaign as early as last year. She is a 29-year-old woman who was enrolled as a graduate student. She's from Russia, was studying at the American University in Washington, D.C. And what we know so far, obviously, in terms of the Trump connection to the NRA, is that the NRA donated a lot of money, around $30 million, to the Trump campaign. And at one of the conventions during the presidential election in 2016, Donald Trump Jr. met with a man named Alexander Torshin, who is a member of Putin's political party, and he is an official at the Russian Central Bank. And Butina, the woman who is indicted, she is an assistant to Torshin. So the allegation is that she was using the NRA in order to develop connections between Russian intelligence and political parties, Republican political officials.
So, James Holman, last question. What's the upshot of the last 2 weeks of all this craziness between Trump and NATO, Trump and England, between, as you put it so well in your article today, between the president and the presidency? I see you wrote on Wednesday, Trump's Helsinki performance is a final straw for some Republicans. Others are just disappointed. How do we catch our breath after these last 2 weeks and say how the world has changed, if at all?
If at all, that's the big question, Brian. The question is, what's next? People at the Pentagon, even 3 days after the summit in Helsinki, still don't know what exactly Trump agreed to during his more than two-hour private meeting with Putin, where they were only joined by their translators. And so the Pentagon, the Kremlin said yesterday, we talked about Syria, we made deals, and we don't, even people inside the Trump administration don't know what those deals are. So I think the devil's in the details there. And also, what is Congress going to do? Are Republicans going to tie the president's hands? At this point, it looks like not. It looks like there's going to be more hand-wringing, but there's not going to be any meaningful action. We might see today a non-binding resolution from the Senate where everyone will vote to say, we support the intelligence community, We believe Russia did interfere, but that's not binding. It's not going to actually do anything. So I think that the big question going forward is, what does Trump actually try to do vis-a-vis Moscow, and what do Republicans on Capitol Hill do?
Well, listeners, now maybe you know a little more than you did a half hour ago about the tiny country of Montenegro and how it plays into Trump and Putin and geopolitics, thanks to Trump and Tucker Carlson snickering about Montenegro for a few seconds on Fox the other night. James Holman, national political correspondent for The Washington Post, author of the Daily 202, Washington Politics news feed, and anchor of Power Post. That's a podcast, right?
It's a website. It's a vertical on our homepage.
Okay, gotcha. And Christina Mazza, reporter covering foreign policy and international affairs. Really well, great articles that I saw of yours all this last week once I started following you. Christina Mazza from Newsweek, thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.